Okay, is everybody ready? Good morning and thanks for joining us here at Southeast Polk Community School District. We had a really great roundtable discussion this morning with the leaders as part of the teacher leadership program here. And this morning I'm pleased to be joined by Ryan Wise, who's the Deputy Director of the Iowa Department of Education, Craig Manazzi, who is the superintendent of schools here in Southeast Polk. And Craig will introduce the whole team here from Southeast Polk that participated with us this morning about the teacher leadership program. Southeast Polk is the third of three stops on our teacher leadership tour that Lieutenant Governor Kim Reynolds and I have taken this spring. Lieutenant Governor Reynolds is on a trade mission in Brazil today, but I had the honor of spending an hour this morning with this Southeast Polk leadership team, and it includes people from faculty and administration, and they shared with me how the teacher leadership and compensation system has gone so far here in Southeast Polk, and it's very encouraging. I am thrilled to report that the work underway at Southeast Polk is just what we envisioned, in fact, maybe even better than what we hoped it could be when we proposed the teacher leadership system to help create world-class schools. As you know, this being phased in over a three-year period, they are in the first cohort of 39 schools. There are going to be 76 more next year, and then the rest of the school districts will be eligible in the year after. After visiting here, as well as Benton Community and Rock Valley, I'm more confident than ever that this unprecedented collaboration by teacher leaders, teachers, and school administrators will indeed transform education all across Iowa. Iowa now has a sweeping systemic approach to better utilize the expertise of many of our top teachers to improve instruction and raise achievement. With clear goals and well-defined teacher leadership roles, Southeast Polk is better meeting the needs of their students and better supporting the more demanding work that teachers must do today. Creating many new positions for teacher leaders, such as model teachers, instructional coaches, and curriculum and professional development leaders, greatly enhances opportunities for collaboration and the capacity to get things done. Iowa's teacher leadership and compensation system is the centerpiece of Iowa's 2013 education reform package, but as you know, it includes many other things as well. Much work lies ahead, but I'm proud of the progress that has been made so far. And now I want to turn it over to Ryan Wise, Deputy Director of the Iowa Department of Education, who has been leading this effort from the department. Ryan?
Thank you, Governor Branstad, for your continued support of teacher leadership. I'm thrilled to be here today at Southeast Polk Community School District. I've had the opportunity to meet with Superintendent Manazzi and his team, and they exemplify the power and potential of teacher leadership to positively impact student learning and student achievement. I'm optimistic that within 2 years, every school district in Iowa will be part of the state's teacher leadership and compensation system, which is known throughout the education system by its acronym, TLC. This is the most comprehensive teacher leadership system in the country. This exciting work is about supporting teachers to do their best work so that our students can do their best work. TLC signals a commitment to make teaching an honored profession with opportunity for growth and development throughout a teacher's career. In my role as deputy director, I've visited many of the first 39 school districts implementing local TLC plans, and I can confidently say that TLC implementation is off to a strong start. Stakeholders in these school districts are enthusiastic champions of better utilizing teachers to transform Iowa's schools. As I've visited with teachers, administrators, parents, and school board members, a few key themes quickly emerge. First, teachers value both increased opportunities available to take on leadership roles and the enhanced support available from their colleagues. A teacher in Benton Community School District told me, "A teacher's day is full, so to be able to ask for support from a coach has been an awesome experience." Second, teacher leadership is a lever for increasing collaboration and in many districts, it has led to better and more widespread use of student data to make informed instructional decisions that positively affect learning. A principal in Sioux City remarked that his school is already seeing big gains in student achievement. Finally, the TLC system is helping facilitate the changes that create a better learning environment for teachers and students alike. When we visited Colonesco Community School District, a board member mentioned that she had noticed a really good vibe and that TLC had re-energized the staff. As we move forward with TLC implementation in Iowa, it's clear that leadership throughout the system is critical to our success. It's one thing to have a plan on paper, and it's quite another to put that plan into practice. Southeast Polk and the other early adopters have provided helpful examples of how to move teacher leadership from planning to implementation for the benefit of Iowa's kids. Now I'll turn the podium over to Superintendent Manazzi.
Thank you, Dr. Wise. I'd like to thank Governor Branstad and his staff for coming to the Southeast Polk Community Schools. We're pleased and honored to have all of you with us this morning and to have an opportunity to share with you parts of our teacher leadership and compensation system. The timing certainly has been wonderful for us as we were well positioned to move forward this year with the teacher leadership and compensation system. We've had a relentless focus in the district over the past several years on student achievement. That is our number one priority of our Board of Education, is to make sure that we do raise student achievement. Our test scores, both on our pre and post-test data, have trended in the right direction along with our Iowa assessments. It's been exciting to see the growth of our teachers and the work of our staff seated to my right, all with the idea of improving instruction in our school district. We've had great collaboration among our teams, our data teams' processes, our professional learning communities, and all the other things that we've been doing to align with the Iowa core. At this time, I'd like to introduce our Associate Superintendent, Joe Horton, who will talk a little bit more about the impact of the system here in our district. Mr. Horton.
Good morning. Excuse me. Thanks to everyone for coming here to Southeast Polk. When we started this adventure, we really saw it as an opportunity to make a difference, and in the most positive sense of the term school reform, that's exactly what we wanted to do, and we knew it's exactly what we needed to do. For us, we really centered on six goals here at Southeast Polk with regard to our teacher leadership system. The first thing we wanted to do was improve classroom instruction by engaging all students in quality learning experiences. Now, we understand that that in terms of quality learning experiences, it didn't really mean that prior to teacher leadership becoming part of our language and part of what we do, that the learning experience weren't learning experiences were not of high quality. But I would definitely say this, that we, as a group, we've come together and really focused on what it is that we want to do as a school, and in essence, how do we do school at Southeast Polk became the question, and the teacher leadership system provided us at least part of the answer, a significant part of the answer to that. Second thing, obviously, part of the goals of the grant and the reform initiative became our goals too, because they were our goals long before this came about, and our second goal really is to improve student achievement. I think that's a goal every school in the world probably shares. This is just our way of going about making that a reality for us, and maybe most importantly for our students. Not maybe most importantly, certainly most importantly. Our third goal is to recruit and develop teacher leaders. We decided early on, because the relationships between and among teachers was just that important to the success of helping others to get better. We recruited only from inside our own school, and we looked at a number of different ways to go about the selection process. And for us, it became really a labor of the administration and our labor union coming together and making decisions as one team. Our fourth goal was to conduct engaging and challenging and effective and, professional development. I think that's a goal, again, I think it's a goal every school has in common, but for us it became a reality because all of a sudden we had more cooks in the kitchen. We had a lot more people involved. We had model teachers who were informing instructional coaches, who were informing our folks in the curriculum office and principals and our curriculum director about what it is that they wanted to learn more about, where their natural curiosities were at that time. And we were able to take all their natural curiosities and put them together with the things that we knew as an administrative group, things we needed to work on, things we wanted to get better at. And it makes for a really, really powerful professional development experience for our teachers. And that, and again, I think we've heard comments to that effect really all year long. It's been very, very rewarding in that regard. Our fifth goal was to retain effective teachers. This system's interesting to me because as a former classroom teacher, I didn't kind of grow up in a system like this. When I was coming up through the ranks, you were a teacher, and then you either remained a teacher or you became an administrator. And it's so positive to see teachers playing different roles and still retaining that label or that identity as a teacher. Part of what we really wanted to do was to make this real for our people, that there's a career ladder there that people could climb if they chose to do that or remain exactly where they are, because it's what they wanted to do from oftentimes from when they were little kids. Lastly, we wanted to create an experience for teachers who are new to the profession. We wanted to create a really, really positive first 2 years that kick off the rest of a career. There's no substitute for a great start. And that's what we really want to provide. And I believe we are providing for our first and second year teachers in our mentoring and induction program. They work hand in glove with our instructional coaches. Those people are available to our young teachers 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And it really has made all the difference. And I would definitely say that for us, we're at a point now where we've been through a year of implementation, and it's really fun to start to see what the next generation of teacher leaders that follow this initial group, what they're going to look like and how things are going to improve for the district. Thank you.
All right. My name is Kirsten Aginaga, and I'm an instructional coach at Reynolds Elementary, so one of eight elementary instructional coaches in our district. And this year, this experience has been really kind of like a roller coaster ride. So we started off not really knowing what this was, where we were headed. We knew where we were headed, just how to get there. So it's been a humbling experience. You know, you start off with just building relationships this first year. We thought it would just be building relationships, forming a partnership with your principal, your teachers, your other instructional coaches, and really, I think we've made great strides this first year. I've been in every classroom in my building. I've been working with all 19 teachers on some level, modeling lessons, effective instructional strategies, co-teaching. I've actually started my first coaching cycle, which I did not think would happen until year two, so it's been really exciting. So it's been a really positive experience. I feel like having the support from the principals, from our administrators, the curriculum team has been one of the greatest reasons why it's been successful. Teachers have been really receptive to it. It's a big, big change, and they have been very, very receptive. It's been very positive. So yeah, that's all I have to say.
Can you give us your name, please?
Yes, it's Kirsten Aginaga. A-G-U-I-N-I-G-A. Reynolds Elementary. K-I-R-S-T-E-N.
And Kristen, are you a full-time instructional coach then?
I am.
So you're not in the classroom anymore?
Not as a classroom teacher. I am in the classroom, but not as a classroom teacher, yes.
And then, do you see any downside to that?
We'll take some questions after that. Yeah.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Jake Bartles. I am an instructional coach, one of six at Southeast Polk High School. Really just echo what Kirsten said. It's been a very powerful experience for us at the high school. You know, one thing that has been really beneficial is to work with new teachers to really keep them in the profession, to help them hone their skills, and to be there for them as they continue through the growth and continue to grow as a teacher.
My name is Michelle Simpson. I teach third grade at Four Mile Elementary. I am a model teacher, and primarily my job has been to welcome administrators and colleagues into my classroom and demonstrate effective teaching practices. A few of those examples would be close reading, which would increase student reading comprehension, and productive group work strategies, which helps increase student engagement during instruction. I've also attended conferences with other model teachers and my instructional coach in my building, and then brought back those ideas in a form of a professional development opportunity for teachers in my building so that they could have those activities that I learned, which was basically math fact fluency practice and activities and ideas. I also have worked with another teacher in our district who does not have a collaborative team. She works in a one-section building, so I invited her to come and work with my teaching team and did some lesson planning with her, worked through curriculum materials, and just made myself available to her as the year has gone on. And finally, the model teachers in my building and the instructional coach and my administrator are participating in a book study. We are currently reading High Impact Instruction by Jim Knight and developing professional development opportunities for next school year.
Hello, I'm Madison Fontana. I am a second grade classroom teacher at Four Mile Elementary, and I've had the privilege of working with both instructional coaches and the model teachers as a classroom teacher. They have provided numerous opportunities for me to see the instructional techniques that they are bringing back, but they've also allowed me to come back into their classrooms and into their offices and share feedback and share some of my ideas that I would like to see implemented as well. Not only have I had the opportunity to work with them, but I've also been through the mentoring induction program that has been implemented this year as well.
I want to make sure the press is aware we have a student with us today. This is Maddie Sheets. Maddie is our student council president at Southeast Polk High School. We also have Maddie seated with our Board of Education. We have a student that attends all of our Board of Education meetings, so I'd like to bring Maddie up.
Hi, I'm Maddie Sheets. Like Mr. Minazzi said, I'm the student council president. Through being in class with the instructional coaches, you can definitely feel the positive vibe that they have with the new teachers. And it's always great to see the new teachers get really excited about being there and being in class, because sometimes class can get boring, but it's not boring with the instructional coaches in there. So it's nice to see their ideas.
Okay, we'd open it for questions on this subject first, on the teacher leadership program. And I'm particularly impressed with, and I've been to these three schools, Benton Community, Rock Valley, and here, and each one of them, I think we've seen a lot of enthusiasm. We see tremendous collaboration, use of data to effectively improve instruction. We'd open it to your questions of any of the presenters or myself on this subject.
I mean, it's just opened a lot of doors for opportunities to practice new strategies that are being brought into the district. It's also just been a really huge support system for new teachers as well. I always have somebody that we can go to, whether it be the instructional coaches or the model teachers. And I mentioned previously that I don't necessarily see it as a hierarchy of positions, but rather the scaffold for all teachers within the district.
Did you, so this came into effect your second
year? My second year here, yes.
I
would say comparing and contrasting it, the collaboration piece is still here, but definitely it's more evident this year. We're collaborating not only as grade level teams, but we're collaborating with the model teachers. The instructional coaches are always coming into our classrooms, and there's just more support this year for all roles in the building.
You know, we have approximately 492 teachers in the district, and about 120, or about one-fourth of our staff, are in some type of leadership role, either as a model teacher or as an instructional coach or as a curriculum leader.
And all of those provide a boost in pay, correct?
Yes. Okay. Yep, they're additional stipends. If you're starting about the base salary of you know, with the teacher leadership and compensation system, we were already at that level.
The money that you got from the stage, how much money did you get? I know it's a $50 million program, so how much money did you get? And then I'm also interested, maybe Catherine was asking this, but as you've taken your instructional coaches out of the classroom, haven't you had to hire teachers to take their place? And is that how big of a role did this new state funding play in that, and what else did you use that money for?
Yeah, you know, the money that came to Southeast Polk was equivalent to about $2.2 million, and all of that money has gone to support the teacher leadership and compensation system. None of the money has gone to administration or anything like that. It's all about moving forward with the hiring of the teachers and the professional development that goes along with it. And their instructional coaches, one of the things that, you know, we really feel that is very, very effective, you know, one of the things when the model actually started is that, you know, people were saying, well, geez, these are your very best teachers that are coming out of the classroom. You know, we feel it's kind of a two-for-one. We get the very best teachers going back into the classroom and supporting that classroom teacher. So many times you'll have two adults that are in that classroom because that instructional coach is in there supporting that classroom teacher. I think there were about 20 new teachers.
And then out of this $2.2 million, that would also pay for the higher salaries for the people, the teachers that have assumed these leadership roles.
Yes.
And that 2.2 is that annually what you're paying for the program, or?
No.
No.
Well, it's built into the school aid formula going forward, so that's a grant the first year.
The first year was 2.2.
Yes.
But that $50 million is in this year, okay, it becomes $100 million next year, and those districts that got it this year get it again, so they get that money, plus there's another 76 districts. They're going to divide up the additional $50 million next year, and then the rest of the districts get it in the third year. That's kind of the way the system works. I would also point out this is a growing district, and they have added other teachers as well, because Southeast Polk is a district that has been growing. So they have, I think you told me there were other teachers that were hired.
In the past 4 years since 2011, we've added between 52 and 53 new staff positions. Much of that based on our growth that we've had in the district, and about 20 of those are via the teacher leadership and compensation system. You know, the grant has, you know, covered all of our needs, and it's really worked very, very well for us. I mean, there are really, I can't think of any down kinds of things that have really happened for us. I know in outstate Iowa, I know that, you know, when the system first started, you know, folks were concerned, you know, what do I do if I take that chemistry teacher out of the classroom, that kind of a thing. But we've been able to attract more and more teachers, and our pool of candidates has certainly increased the last few years. So that's not been an issue for us. You know, we've shared with our Board of Education at our April meetings a list of potential reductions that we would have, but that none of those reductions for us would mean any pink slips for staff or any reduction of staff. We would reduce the budget in some other way, so it would not be through the reduction of personnel. We would probably take care of some of our reductions. We would probably reduce our instructional supply budgets by about 10%. There will be some energy savings that because we've saved some money through energy this year, we would use those to balance our budget. And also we would not adopt some of the curriculum materials that we were going to adopt for the 15-16 school year. We would put those adoptions off for another year. Those would be the major. Like social studies materials, there was a social studies adoption, a math adoption, and also some language arts materials. Yes. Yes.
How much total savings would you have to achieve the reductions you were talking about? What's the aggregate number?
It depends on, again, where the state supplemental aid would come in. You know,
based on the zero growth rate.
Right. If we were at zero, and again there was no decision that could be made at the legislative level, we would be reducing about 600,000, and our total budget is about 110 million.
Would you need to make reductions at 1.25?
We would have to make some reductions at 1.25 also.
Would you at 2.625?
No, we would not.
No, I don't think so. I don't think that's correct. First of all, I think it's important to understand the whole picture. Okay? Supplemental state aid is only part of what the state does for school districts. We also have 1 cent of sales tax that's earmarked for school infrastructure. That amounts to $410 million a year. And we're in a STEM classroom here. I wish the Lieutenant Governor was here because she's very committed to STEM, but you see all these computers. Well, there's two programs, one of which is the sales tax. The other is the PEPL program that can help pay for computers and buildings and things like that. Then we also have money that's going for the Reading Resource Center, which is to help with the early childhood reading. And we're putting in, and that is being utilized in this district as well. And of course, we also are putting money into a stipend for high achievers that go into difficult subjects like math, science, and agriculture. That is all over and above what we're doing with the $50 million more each year for the teacher leadership program and the supplemental state aid. In the biennial budget that I presented in January, I recommended the additional $50 million for the supplemental state aid and the $50 million for the teacher leadership program. And in the second year, another $100 million for supplemental state aid plus another $50 million for the teacher leadership program. Now that is $250 million over this biennium. That's on top of the $3 billion that's already in the state budget. That doesn't count the $440 million that is earmarked directly from sales tax. So if you look at all of that together, you can see K through 12 public education is the top priority in terms of state appropriations. Part of the problem is this year we're facing a difficult economic circumstances due to a downturn in farm income. Land values have already dropped 15%. The United States Department of Agriculture is estimating farm income will drop 32%. I don't want to repeat the mistakes of the past. When the legislature overpromised and promised to do a certain level of supplemental state aid, it used to be called allowable growth, and then didn't follow through and had to cut across the board. And that happened again and again between the year 2002 and 2010. I promised when I came in as governor, we're going to restore stability and predictability, and what we promised to school districts, like the teacher leadership program, we will follow through and we will implement. And we will also provide additional resources as we can afford to in things like supplemental state aid. Well, first of all, I don't know the details of their proposed budget, but I do know that we are committed to working with both the House and the Senate to work out the differences. And this is a process. I've been around and seen this over the years. What I don't want to do is repeat the mistakes of the past where the legislature consistently overpromised, then couldn't deliver. I want to make sure that what we agree upon, we have the resources and can deliver, and it's sustainable over the long term.
This 2.6573.
I'm not going to get into the details of the different proposals between the House and the Senate. Obviously, those are things that have to be worked out through the conference committee process, and I do respect the independence of the legislative branch of government, but I also do have the final say as the chief executive, and I want to make sure that whatever we agree upon, the legislature agrees upon, it is sustainable over the long term.
So would you veto?
I'm not one that threatens vetoes.
You have the final say.
Well, I do, and you know that. And I have used the veto on occasion, but I prefer to work things out and not have to. And so my goal is to work in a collaborative way, just as they have demonstrated it can be done here in Southeast Polk. That's the thing that I've found really, you know, change is threatening. And the teachers need to know that these coaches and model teachers are there to support and assist them, and that they don't feel threatened. And that's the same thing that I want to look at it as my approach as governor. I want to be there to support and assist the legislature in working out their differences and resolving this in a timely way. I know it's already past due. I would like to see this get done in the month of May, and we're going to try to do everything we can to facilitate that. I did that by presenting my budget, not at the deadline at the end of January, but on the second day of the legislative session. And I made recommendations for both years of the biennium, and I think we need to pass that biennial budget. But I do respect the legislative process, and we will work with them to get it resolved.
Governor, should the House Republicans be using the surplus fund balance to make a budget proposal? Yours does, and they're saying they won't touch that money. They call it one-time.
Well, these are things, these are differences that need to be worked out, and we are interested in trying to work those out in a way that meets the commitments that we want to make to education and other programs, and also make sure that we have a budget that is sustainable for the long term.
But do you consider that one-time money?
I support the law that we passed in 1986, the spending reforms. The spending reforms require that 10% of the budget be set aside in the cash reserve and economic emergency account. You may recall when I came into office, part of that money had been used by the previous administration. We have now fulfilled and filled the cash reserve and economic emergency account. And we have a balance over and above that. That money is available under the spending reforms, but we can only spend 99% of the revenue that comes in plus that balance that's available over and above that. My budget is well below that 99% spending limitation. So I wanted to make sure that I have a budget that's, and then we have a five-year projection. So we project with the additional commitments we've made to both teacher leadership and property tax relief, and with the other things that are built into the budget, is it sustainable over the 5 years? And we presented that to you when I presented my State of the State and budget message back in January. And you may know that revenue, we based my budget based on the December revenue estimate. The legislature waited till March to see what revenue would be. Well, it turns out the March revenue estimate is $19 million below the December revenue estimate that I based my budget on. So, but, you know, remember, we have an over a $7 billion budget. So $19 million sounds like a lot of money, but it is a small portion of that.
I want to ask, the House isn't funding tuition freeze for three state universities. They also aren't funding this Bruce Rassiter plan to revise the region's funding formula. What should they, are they doing the wrong thing?
Well, as I said, we want to work out these differences. I have presented our budget recommendations, which I stand by, and we intend to work with both the House and the Senate and respect the fact that they have different viewpoints. But before this thing is over, we have to come together, and it has to pass by a constitutional majority, both houses, and gain my signature.
Are you okay with not having, with raising tuition at this time with all the kids having student debt?
I'm a kid. His parents didn't have the money to send me to college, and I borrowed money only when I had to. I didn't get my last loan paid back till I was governor. So I'm very sensitive to these families and these kids, that and I have also a proposal in my budget that would help reduce student debt for students that participate in programs, volunteer programs that could help reduce their debt. And I think freezing tuition for the third year in a row, which would be unprecedented, would be a good thing for us to do. I also support increasing the tuition grant and support for the community colleges.
Governor, you say that you recommended enough money for the region's redistribution thing, but they said they needed 12 and you only gave them 4.
I think it was 5. But you're talking about the University of Iowa, the backfill for the University of Iowa. Right. And that's what the regents asked for. Obviously, the budgeting process, and you all know how this works, the regents and the other groups put together their asks, and then I have the responsibility to put together a budget that is balanced, and I made a commitment when I ran for governor again that I would not only see the budget was balanced, that we would restore the money in the cash reserve and economic emergency account, and we'd put together a sustainable budget, a two-year biennial budget, and one that has projections out 5 years that's sustainable, that can meet our commitments. I have done that. And yet, I then now have to work with the legislature to make sure that whatever finally is approved by the legislature meets those guidelines as well.
All right, thank you, Governor.
That's what we're going to work on.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.